The Local Thread.
Welcome to the first episode of Toledo Works from the Toledo Free Press and WGTE Public Media. I'm Jaden Jefferson, a politics and government writer and podcast host for the Free Press. I, alongside my colleague Stephen Zenner, will rotate as hosts of this program. In terms of what you can expect from this show, an exploration of what it's like to work in Toledo. Not with those you tend to already hear from, but from workers themselves. Later this hour, you're going to hear from Abby Spencer, who is a teacher at the Toledo Day Nursery, to discuss its importance to those it serves and a typical day in her world. But first, I'm joined by Catherine McGuckin of Mercy Health to talk about the Women, Infants, and Children program, or WIC, the need it meets, and how she approaches this work. Catherine, thanks for coming on Toledo Works as our first guest. Just before we talk about WIC, let's kind of talk about your day today and how you got involved in the program.
Okay, well, I went to school to become a dietitian, and in becoming a dietitian, there's many different avenues you can follow. A lot of dietitians work in clinical settings in a hospital, but through my training, I became very interested more in the public health sphere, and I was passionate about serving children in need, and I was excited about working in the prenatal area as well, because I think that tapping into pregnant women is a time in their life when they're really motivated and excited to do things in a positive way to impact their health. So I think that you can really make an impact, not just for that pregnancy, but for their whole life. So when I completed my training as a dietitian, I really sought out employment in WIC because that was the area I was most passionate about.
And certainly the time of pregnancy, it's a time of change, of course, but it's also a time of uncertainty. And so would you view your role as kind of bringing some certainty and bringing some semblance of normalcy to a very unnormal time?
Sure, because for one thing, a lot of times when women become pregnant, it's a scary time because they don't always have all the resources that they need. And WIC is a program that can make an impact there and make them feel more comfortable, like somebody cares and like somebody is providing them with some of those resources and gives them a little bit more stability.
Yeah, and speaking to that stability, what are some of the different ways that you try to provide that stability?
So the families that we serve, they come into our program. They receive quite a bit of nutrition education. We give them a debit card that's loaded with specific healthy foods that's needed in their diet. And we also give them, you know, referrals to other resources in the community that might be able to help them.
Would it be accurate to say that you maybe also experience a bit of pressure because it seems like there's a lot of responsibility and obviously providing that great guidance to help raise that child later on? So I kind of imagine that for you, this is also a change.
I guess it's something that I'm used to. So I'm comfortable with it. You know, we just are excited when people are motivated and excited to learn. Not, you know, you get a variety of responses from people. Sometimes people have other stressors in their life, so maybe they aren't ready to listen at that moment, but you hope that you reach them when you can.
And you mentioned that education is a key component of WIC, so let's kind of talk about WIC at large. What does this program entail for people who are unfamiliar?
So WIC is, our long name is the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children. We are a federal program, so all of our funding comes from the federal government,
right.
And WIC is located everywhere in the United States. It'll be pretty similar from state to state. We, you know, like I said, provide health screenings. We check heights, weights, and hemoglobins. We provide nutrition education, and then probably what people think of most when they think of WIC are the foods that we provide, things such as, you know, milk, cheese, yogurt, cereal, juice, fruits and vegetables. Those are just a few examples. But the other important part of our program is we are the largest breastfeeding promotion program in the country. And so we really assist women in being successful with breastfeeding their infants as well.
And what would you say is the importance of just having that health care and that support early in life for a lot of these children in the community?
Well, WIC has been proven to be a very effective program. Women who participate in our program while they're pregnant have less low birth weight infants, less premature births. Children who participate in the program are less likely to have iron deficiency anemia. They start school more prepared to learn. And every dollar invested in WIC has been proven to save over $3 in Medicaid expenditures. So we're a very effective program. And, you know, the statistics show that we are helping people.
So prevention is better than having to address those issues later in life.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So it kind of, there's this saying, it takes a village to raise a child. Certainly it sounds true for the WIC program.
Yeah, that's, we like to think of ourselves as part of that village for sure.
What is the value in that for a new mother to have so much support? Because if there are so many questions and concerns about pregnancy, what is it like to have so much support and have answers to those questions?
Well, I hope that they would say that we're helpful to them and that they appreciate the support that they receive from WIC, not just the foods they receive, but also the education.
For sure. And looking at just the way that this work has maybe changed you or influenced the way you view life, what would you say are some key moments for you that stick out in your time working with WIC locally?
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
No problem. Yeah, because, obviously this is something that a lot of people, yeah. You mentioned that you came into this from a dietary angle,
yeah.
And then transitioned to WIC. And so is that something that's common in the field where people maybe start one place and then end up in another area?
Well, all the WIC programs do employ dietitians. So that's just one of the options that dietitians have as a career path. And I've been working in WIC for over 27 years now. That's where I started, and that's where I've stayed because I really do enjoy working with this population, and I feel like we make a difference.
And in that time, what would you say have been some of the significant changes, or has this mostly kind of been the same and more routine for you?
There's little changes here and there that come up throughout the years, like maybe we offer slightly different food packages. One big change that we had over the years is we really expanded our breastfeeding program. In Lucas County, for example, now we have 5 breastfeeding peer assistants who are all women who have been on the program, and we use them as peer educators to help our other women be successful with breastfeeding. So that was a big expansion of the program that's been really nice.
So it sounds kind of like mentorship. With them having gone through the experience, they can kind of offer a more down-to-earth perspective, maybe
exactly.
Versus someone who maybe hasn't gone through the program.
Exactly, right.
And what would you say has been the real driver of that change? Because you mentioned that breastfeeding wasn't initially the biggest priority. And so how did it become a larger priority?
I just think over the years, all the research that has shown how beneficial breastfeeding is to women and infants, and all the different health benefits and social benefits that are achieved through breastfeeding. And they really wanted to make sure that we were making the most of our education that we have available on the program in helping women be successful.
Certainly. And I know you may not always be exposed to what ends up happening with the children who grow up, but they've always, of course, had the impact of having their mother in that program. And so for you, how do you think about the impact that WIC has long term? Because we know obviously that it can save money having that early, intervention early in life. But what do you make of just the long term impact that this has?
Well, I know that, when children are healthier, they're more likely to have healthy brain development, and they're more likely to be successful in school, hopefully finish school, go on to have good careers of their own with healthy bodies and healthy minds.
Yeah, and kind of talk to me about the different mothers that WIC serves. So what's the typical parent that is going through WIC?
We serve a really wide variety of families. We serve almost 50% of the babies born in this country, so that's not just one group of people.
Right.
We serve all ethnicities. We have different ages of mothers, from teen moms to older moms as well, that have several children. Even income-wise, although we are a program that's designed to serve lower income families, most of our families are working families. So a variety of careers as well.
Yeah, so obviously time is another thing, because when you have so much time that's spent working, there may not always be the ability to help out and just to be very hands-on during a pregnancy.
Yeah.
And kind of expanding upon that, because you serve such a variety of different people, is that a challenge, or is it something that you just kind of learn more from because you're serving so many people?
Oh, I think you learn a lot by serving a variety of people, and it makes your day a lot more interesting too, because all people are different, I guess, but it's definitely interesting when you have somebody from another culture come in and then you learn from them as well.
Yeah, and kind of speaking to that, what are some of the different ways that a mother will find out about the WIC program and some of the ways that this program is, you know, out in the community where people can be have access to it?
Yeah, a lot of people are pretty familiar with WIC just through word of mouth because we are such a wide-reaching program.
For sure.
But we do always appreciate it when other healthcare providers, you know, educate their clients about us and give us referrals. I think the group of people we sometimes tend to miss or realize that they might not be eligible are, you know, the working families who think, well, I have a job. I wouldn't be eligible for a program like that. And many times they are eligible, and we want to help them and make sure they're getting all the benefits they're eligible for.
So is it often a surprise when they find out that they are, in fact, eligible?
Sometimes people are surprised, yes.
And why does it make a difference to be able to have that support even working? Because a lot of people don't realize that for someone who is working, they don't always have the time to do the things that they read in a parent's book. And so to have that support while working, what's the benefit?
So we want people to have access to the education that we provide. And sometimes people will say to us, oh, I can afford to buy my own milk. I don't want to take advantage of the program. I want to make sure that it's available for someone that might need it more than me. And what I always tell people is, first of all, by taking advantage of the program, you are not taking it away from someone else. If anything, you are helping other people to have access to the program, because when people take advantage of the program, they're more likely to give us more funding. If people say, oh, I don't need it, that's when they're going to cut funding. And we want people, maybe you can afford to buy a gallon of milk, but if you didn't have to afford to buy a gallon of milk, you could use that money to afford something else that your family needs. And I bet everybody can think of something else they'd like to spend their money on.
I'm sure the answer is different for everyone, but why do you think that mentality is so pervasive where we feel as if that there are others out there who need it more than us? Do you know where that could maybe stem from or originate from?
I don't know. I don't know if sometimes people feel there's maybe a stigma attached to asking for help, but I feel like that's what we all pay our taxes for. And if you're not ashamed to drive on the road that you paid for, don't be ashamed to take advantage of the other programs that are out there for you as well.
So would you say that that maybe is one of the biggest barriers to the program not expanding even more, is that there are people who feel like they couldn't benefit from it, even though, as we've discussed, there are ways they can?
Yeah, there are. WIC is probably only serving about 60 to 70% of the people who are actually eligible. And we would love to serve 100% of the people who are eligible. And we don't want anyone to feel any stigma or shame about asking for help or feel like that they're taking it away from someone else, because that's not the case at all.
Right, because obviously if they aren't asking for help from WIC, they're maybe asking for help from a family member or
sure.
someone else in their life.
Right.
And just speaking to the funding aspect you mentioned, there is sometimes that lingering concern over funding. In your time with WIC, what have you noticed in terms of how funding has fluctuated? Has it generally increased, decreased? What are you seeing?
To my knowledge, we haven't really had much funding decrease. We are usually sometimes flat funded or sometimes increased. But fortunately, WIC is a pretty popular program with both political parties because we have been proven to be so effective. And it's just not popular to take food away from babies. So
Who would have thought?
Yeah. So we usually do okay with funding.
Yeah. And looking at the community support, too, are there ways in which people, obviously they pay their taxes to support WIC, mm-hmm. but are there ways that they can be of benefit to the program, maybe by spreading the word, for example?
Yeah, we would love it if people would encourage their friends, their neighbors, their family members to participate if they know that they're eligible. And even lead by example. If you know you're eligible, say, hey, I get WIC, you know, this is where the clinic is. I'll take you, or let me tell you where it is, or, you know, anything they could do to help out would be great.
So when someone arrives at a clinic, generally speaking, what can they expect to see there?
So when they arrive, they'll be greeted by one of our intake clerks. They need to bring identification and proof of income, such as proof that they're on Medicaid or, you know, a pay stub. We assess their eligibility, and then they get their height, their weight, and their hemoglobin assessed. And then they talk to a dietitian one-on-one where they're, you know, get a health history interview and they're given, you know, some brief nutrition education, and then we load up a debit card full of good healthy foods for them, and that's pretty much it.
And that debit card, how can they use it?
So they take that to the grocery store, and the debit card, it's not like SNAP benefits where their debit card is loaded with a specific dollar amount to spend for the month. Their debit card is loaded with specific items and amounts of foods. So it will say 3 gallons of milk, 36 ounces of breakfast cereal, et cetera. So they go to the store and they get those specific items.
And you as a dietitian can speak to this. What is the importance of having the right foods early in a child's life?
Sure. So WIC was designed to supplement specific nutrients in the diet. Protein, vitamin C, iron, calcium, those are some of our target nutrients. And those are all important for the growth and development of children.
Yeah, and speaking to the parents here, because obviously there is so much responsibility that comes with picking out the right foods, does this alleviate some pressure from them just having kind of a guidance that they can follow?
Sure, yeah. They know that all the cereals that are provided by WIC, for example, are going to be healthy choices for their family. They're all iron fortified, and they all don't have very much sugar in them. So you're not going to go get Lucky Charms, but you can get Cheerios, or, you know, there's a long list, a lot of choices.
And I would say it's also probably not great to have Lucky Charms later in life either. Right. I mean, I can speak to this. I put on some pounds myself. I do just wonder, because this is obviously focused early in the child's life, just a lot about how long is WIC still a part of that, you know, from pregnancy, and to what point does WIC start to become a smaller part of the equation?
So people are eligible to stay on WIC until their fifth birthday. And after, when the child turns 5, they're typically getting ready to start school at that point. And that's when, like, school breakfast and school lunch takes over.
Right.
So we're in the early part of childhood getting them the nutrients they need at that point, and then hopefully they can continue to receive other, you know, nutrition from other sources.
So would you say by being in the first 5 years, there's starting to be a habit that's built around picking out the right foods?
Sure. And if the child gets used to eating Cheerios, for example, instead of Lucky Charms at a young age, they haven't, you know, then they develop a taste for those healthier items.
In terms of expanding the reach of the program and then providing that information, what are some different ways that WIC reaches into different communities around our area?
Well, we try to be familiar with other agencies out there that are helping families so that we can provide referrals. And we're very familiar with most of the OBs and pediatricians in the area because they, you know, refer a lot of clients to us. But at the same time, we refer clients back to them too as well. So
yeah, and when you mentioned those other agencies, the word partnerships came to mind, because naturally that's a big part of this. And so what do those different partnerships look like?
Really just, you know, referral sources back and forth, and we try to educate each other about what we do so that, you know, they can tell their clients about WIC and we can tell our clients about them.
Yeah. And for you, obviously, you know, providing a look at the right foods and picking out the right foods for folks, you know, what is the impact that you do hope to make in a child's life and, of course, in that parent's life as well?
Really just to make sure that they're getting the nutrition that they need to grow and develop properly.
Yeah. And what are some of the different ways that people can find out more about WIC and get involved?
Well, they can certainly call their local WIC clinic, and we can give them any information that they need. That would be the main thing.
Yeah. And kind of talk to me a little bit about your colleagues that are involved in this program. And we focused a lot on the dietary aspect, but certainly there are other people that are a part of WIC locally. So kind of speak to what the different roles are at WIC and how everyone is serving this larger goal here.
Okay. So there's probably 4 different roles within the WIC program, the main one being the dietitian. Then we also have our clerical staff. We have a certified lactation consultant on our staff, and she's the one that kind of oversees our 5 peer assistants as well.
And is there a way for you personally to still learn more about this? You mentioned that you've been involved for over 20 years as a dietitian, but are you still learning new things even coming in each day?
Oh, of course. Yeah, there's always continuing education, and like the state and national WIC they provide us with additional education as well. So yeah, of course, we're always learning.
Yeah. What would you say that state legislators and even those on the federal level can learn and take away from the work of WIC? What are some things that you feel that they're maybe not attuned to that they could learn and maybe could be of help to you at WIC?
I guess just to know that the funding for WIC is important and that we want them to continue that. And, you know, the foods that we provide are important. We're always open to providing more if they want to give us more funding.
You know, I think that there are a lot of government agencies that would probably say the same thing for sure. And I mean, looking at just some of the different problems, I know the problems can stay the same, but what are some unique challenges that families may deal with that maybe people don't naturally think of?
I think transportation is a big one. And, you know, if they're working, a lot of their jobs may have different hours that fluctuate, or they're working evenings or weekends, and then, you know, finding time to keep appointments or having transportation to get to appointments, those can all be challenging. So it is common for people to miss their WIC appointment because they have so many other things going on in their life. We're very flexible. We will work to get you in whenever. And if you miss an appointment, there's no punishment. You just reschedule and we'll get you in. But I know that that's a challenge for families.
And what really comes to mind when you mention that is just the importance of empathy, because mm-hmm. people always assume or may tend to assume that someone isn't doing something because they simply don't want to. But in the reality, there is more things that are going on and the picture is more complex.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And so how do you help overcome those challenges that someone may be experiencing? Because obviously you cannot provide reliable transportation, but maybe it is in the form of empathy.
Yeah. And we try to just be as flexible as possible. You know, if somebody is late for an appointment, we still try to serve them. I mean, I can't guarantee that 100%, but I'd say at least 90%. you know, if somebody just walks in, we do our best to serve them as a walk-in. And, you know, if someone needs to reschedule, we try and reschedule them for the next day or, you know, whatever it's convenient for them. We try to be as flexible as possible.
Yeah, and certainly other community members, they play a role in obviously ensuring that this process goes a bit smoother. What would you say, based on your experiences, are ways that community members can step up for the person in their life who's currently going through a pregnancy and maybe needs a little extra help?
Probably just being supportive. Providing rides is probably a big one if somebody does have struggle with transportation. Not just rides to appointments, but maybe rides to the grocery store. You know, things like that. Maybe even helping with food prep, because, you know, we can get them the foods, but when you're too tired to cook it, you know, that's a challenge too. So I think any mom appreciates somebody giving them a helping hand.
Yeah, certainly I can attest to how busy life is, because you want to do what's best for your child. But of course, it can feel like you could make you feel bad when you're not able to do what's best for the child, because you also have to focus on getting work done and to pay the bills for that child. So it's a really complex picture. Do you wish more people were aware of the challenges that mothers face? Because it's so easy to judge, but not actually see what's going on in their life.
Right, for sure. I think sometimes we see people, I don't know, maybe they give their kid junk food or something, and you want to say, well, why are you giving your kid that candy? But sometimes that's the one thing these moms can easily afford, that they feel like they're giving their kid a special treat. And everybody wants to be able to give their kid a special treat. And there's just, yeah, there is a lot going on with people and lots of stress in life. So best to just meet people where they're at and educate where you can.
And that is a big systemic problem, which is that the things that aren't always ideal for that child are the most affordable, are the easiest, the most accessible. And so looking at it from that angle, I know you're not a policy expert, but you are a food expert. And so looking at that, what could be some changes we should make in our society to better suit families by ensuring that what isn't so good for that child isn't the easiest to access?
Well, I think that WIC plays a big role in that, because the foods that we provide are the healthier foods. And so we know that they're at least getting those foods into the house. And if you get some less nutritious foods into the house, also through other ways, at least there's a balance there, hopefully.
Yeah, and socioeconomic factors play a big role in this too, because we think about food deserts. There are some parts of this community where a grocery store isn't within a walk away, and in some cases you have to drive. And so what role does that play, the disparities that exist in just our community?
Yeah, I mean, definitely it can be a challenge for people to get to the store. You know, with WIC, for example, you know, there are ways that you can get food delivery, but WIC, that's not a part of the WIC program. You have to actually go to the store yourself. So that, I think that's a challenge, and maybe that's something that could be expanded on in some point.
Yeah. And what do you hear from the people that are involved in your program? How do they address some of these different challenges themselves?
I think a lot of people use public transportation. And I think a lot of people have other people in their life that they rely on for assistance. I know that for WIC appointments, for example, a lot of people do take cabs that are paid for through their medical insurance. So that's a really good resource.
And I imagine, I've interviewed a lot of people that have done work that is supporting the community. Oftentimes, they don't give themselves a lot of credit for it. I imagine you don't wake up in the morning and say, I'm making a difference, but obviously you are in many ways. And so how does it feel to actually be able to provide support, even if there are still other challenges that someone is facing, to at least be able to alleviate some of them?
Yeah, the way I kind of approach my day is I know that I'm not able to solve every need for every person. But if I can solve one need for that person, at least I've hopefully made a dent.
And it seems like that's the psychology behind this, is that I'm not going to be able to fix everything, but I am going to be able to fix some things.
Yes, exactly.
So long term, what do you see for yourself in the future in terms of WIC? Is this something that you're going to continue to expand and look for other opportunities within this program? Because I know your passion is specifically in the nutrition space, but how do you maybe hope to grow it in the future?
To be honest, I will probably stick in the role that I have because I like doing it. It works. It's a nice 9-to-5 job that's Monday through Friday, and that works for me being a mom myself. So I enjoy what I do. And I'll probably just stick in the role that I've got.
Yeah, and being a mom yourself, obviously you've gone through this. And so just lastly here, being able to have shared that experience and now have others who are going through the same thing, is there any unique wisdom that comes with that?
Oh, yes. I think that when you've gone through, you know, feeding your own kids and all of that, you can relate to people a lot better, because just because I'm a dietitian and I know about nutrition doesn't mean that my kids don't have the same eating challenges that every other kid has. So it definitely helps to have your own personal experience.
Yeah. Even being an expert, I'm sure you still have, you know, the child who's questioning, I don't know if I like this. So you still have the picky eater to deal
absolutely.
With.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And would you say that also builds credibility even more so than just having the knowledge of nutrition, because it seems like people gravitate more to someone who has gone through this and really knows what they're experiencing.
Yes, I think people always appreciate it when you can share a personal story from your own life that relates to them, and you can see that you have something in common and similar experiences.
Building trust.
Yeah.
Well, Catherine McGuckin of Mercy Health, thank you so much for joining me to talk about WIC today.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And Toledo Works continues right after this. Welcome back to Toledo Works. I'm your host, Jaden Jefferson. My next guest is Abby Spencer, who is a teacher at the Toledo Day Nursery. Thanks for coming in. I just want to first begin with the Toledo Day Nursery itself. Kind of talk about what a typical day looks like for you and what the Toledo Day Nursery does for folks.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm in the preschool classroom at Toledo Day Nursery. A typical day for me starts going into the classroom, getting my students, bringing them into our room. We start with breakfast. We have three meals or three chances to eat the day. So we start with breakfast. Students can choose if they'd like it or if they'd not like it. And during that time, we try to keep it calm. They do books and puzzles, kind of ease them in slowly into the day. So after breakfast and calming time, then we move into free play. We have different areas set up around the room that kind of target their different interests. So we have a gross motor area where they can get those big movements out, get some energy out, as well as building. There's a dramatic play space where that changes weekly, monthly, depending on what they're interested in. Right now, it's an optometrist office where the kids are learning that big word. they're getting really into animals as well. So we're incorporating animals in that as well. So, yeah, just kind of after breakfast, they get to draw, play, create, do whatever they want to do. We'll do that. And after free play, we join together for a morning meeting where we greet everybody. We all say hello to each other. We get some dancing and some singing out. Depending on what we're working on, we might read a story. We might talk about some social emotional things that we're working on that day. After that, we make our commitment to safety, we call it, where each kid will take a big breath, do that calming breath, and they'll say, I'm committed to keeping my school family safe today. They'll put their little picture in this treasure box that we have for their safekeeper, and then we transition to outside. We view outside as our outdoor classroom, so we try to keep the learning going out there. Again, gross motor, different things that they're interested in. After that, we do standard lunch nap, and in the afternoon, we wake them up, do snack, and kind of the whole thing over again. We have some more free play and some then outside time. So,
and as you discussed this typical day, a couple words stuck out to me, one being responsibility, because the kids are taking responsibility for each other, mm-hmm. but also independence, because it seems like their day is basically guided by their own interests.
Absolutely. So that's something that we're really big on. We try to guide everything in the classroom based on what they're interested in, because kids aren't going to be engaged and they're not going to want to do what you have out if this is what Miss Abby's interested in today, right? And so kids, let's all do this. So we really try to guide it with, like you said, with what they're interested in. Another thing that you mentioned, responsibility, independence, we're very big on that. At the meals, the kids clean up their plates. They take it to the little dish bucket. They're responsible for cleaning up their own materials. Pretty typical stuff, but we really try to stick them and hold them to that responsibility, training them to be adults and training them to be productive humans around each other. So absolutely, that's one thing that we're really big on.
And it's fascinating because it really does kind of help them mold what they want to do with the clay that is their life.
For sure. Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it. Yeah, we try to just tune in, and there will be moments where, you know, one teacher will just sit down and say, okay, today I'm just going to focus on taking notes and gathering information about what they're interested in. Because if we're so focused on our day to day and we don't tune in and hear what they're really talking to each other about and what they're doing, then we'll never know where to go next. So it's really important for us to really be watching and listening always, obviously for safety, but to keep them engaged in what they're doing as well.
And I can imagine for you working with kids, every day is a different day. And I know this as a former kid myself. I know, you know, we've got 1 year left, but I definitely can think about how I was at that age where every day my interests would change.
And absolutely.
So what is that like for you where you're coming into work today and there's just going to be something completely different that a child is interested in?
Yeah. I think for me, sometimes it can be hard. I'm very routine based. And so I have to kind of step away from my own needs and my routine.
They kind of force you to.
Yeah, absolutely. in the best way. So one thing that my team is really good about is if there's something that we are noticing right away and we can drop what we're doing and we can switch it up and pull those materials right away, we're going to do it. We're not waiting to say, oh, let's get this out tomorrow or, oh, let's do this next week. Is if they're in it now and we can do it, we're going to do it. So that's been with the animals recently. My coworker Lindsay has been really deep diving into they're really big on cats. You know, they always want to crawl around and play kitties. And so she was trying to find a way to kind of extend it to more just not just surface level. Like, yeah, we all like cats. But so one of the things she's doing right now is she's breaking down the different parts of a cat. We're starting with their face. She printed out all these different pictures. And at the drawing table, they can look at that and look in the mirror and see, you know, the cat's eyes versus their eyes. And what color are their eyes? What color are my eyes? And finding the right materials for that. So it seems kind of silly, but just trying to break down things into as many pieces as we can to keep their interest. So it's not just like, hey, guys, we're interested in cats. Here's a stuffed cat. There you go. We're trying to like break it down into more manageable pieces and really give them lots of different alleyways to go off of what they're interested.
And as you talk about it, it sounds like a very dynamic learning environment because kids, obviously, they can pick up on a lot at a young age, but this is really helping them explore and learn new things about the way they approach the world. So, for example, that you provided, you know, from going from the cat at the surface level to looking at the cat in a more complex level. Mm-hmm. And so what difference does it make kind of starting kids out early in that way?
one of the differences that I've noticed is that really teaching them to be critical thinkers rather than, like I said, surface level, getting them to ask those deeper questions, to look at themselves in the mirror and, you know, think about it deeper. We have the Imagination Station, and they come and partner with us, and they do mindful STEAM visits, and that's been really helpful to get them thinking like scientists. They have their poem that they, I am a scientist, and it talks about, I explore things high and low, I experiment and test, and I think that kind of goes along with what you were saying about that critical thinking, just really getting them to think about the process of thinking, which sounds really deep for 3 and 5 year olds. But getting them to ask why, getting them to explore why they're interested in that, and not just, oh, because I like it. Well, what do you like about it? And what about that is interesting to you? So
right, because it prepares them for the world in which they're not going to be told how to think. They're going to have to think things through themselves. And,
absolutely.
You know, it's interesting because you have to tell people there is a way to think about how to think.
Mm-hmm.
And so definitely kids are kind of being set on that path to start asking questions about things that interest them and maybe things that may not be as interesting to them.
Absolutely. So one of the things that I've noticed as far as getting them interested in things, I think with technology being so pervasive in our kids'
yeah.
life, it's everywhere. It's from the moment that they wake up to the moment that they go to bed. A lot of what they're seeing and watching and listening is not really what they're choosing, right? It either comes up on YouTube or it comes up on their Netflix. And granted, they might say, yeah, I want to watch Spider-Man for the 30th time in a row, but that's because it was put before them. So one of the things that we really try to do is just kind of throw out a bunch of things. Like, yes, we're listening to what they're interested in, but also, you know, if there's kind of a day or a week that they're not really sure either, we're like, hey, let's try this. So we're giving them lots of different things to test out, which I don't think a lot of kids have that opportunity to do at home. You know, these are the things that we have, and we don't have a giant storeroom or shelf to choose a bunch of different things out. So just giving them lots of different options to explore.
Yeah. How does it feel to be the vehicle for that? Because obviously, you know, you're the one who is playing the role in this child's life of helping them find what are the things that they want to do and really
mm-hmm.
have choice in what they want to do.
I feel really proud being a part of that. I don't have children myself. And I came from a background of elementary education, so a little bit older and more standards-based, more curriculum-focused. And so getting down to the preschool level and really seeing their imagination go wild and bloom, and it's really awesome. Like, I love being a part of that. I love, you know, asking that nudging question and seeing where their mind takes them next. It really makes me feel like I'm not just their teacher, but like I'm really, really in their lives with them. And I don't think just a teacher is the right word either, but it really feels like I'm down there with them some days. Like I'm in my imagination too. So it kind of helps me tap into my inner child as well. And so that's kind of freeing in some sense, getting to play and just be silly and goofy with them too.
And I want to expand on that because I feel like that was an underlying theme I had in my head, is that for you, this is kind of exploring your inner child, because
yeah.
as we become adults, we start to lose that sense of curiosity.
Absolutely. It's amazing the things that you've discovered when you're in my role of, oh, yeah, I actually like that too, or I never thought about it that way. Really not just focusing on telling kids how it is, but pausing and thinking, oh, why do you think that way? And then it helps me stretch my brain and stretch my imagination as well. Yeah, I've definitely locked into my inner kid a lot more in preschool than I did in elementary ed. It's just been so much fun. It's just the past 2 years that I've been in preschool have just been a blast.
And the kids are also having that exposure to the outdoors. And you mentioned that they're constantly going to be having this dopamine-filled life, which is
mm-hmm.
social media, television, music. But for them to actually be exposed to the outdoors, maybe something that older adults say they don't see often is children who are enjoying time outdoors. What difference does it make to take the educational component and merge it with the outdoors?
It makes a huge difference. Today has been a rainy day, and we were cooped up inside most of the day, and just the energy level that you can see throughout the day just skyrockets when they're not able to go out and move their bodies and be in the sunlight and be in the fresh air. As I mentioned earlier, we really view our playground as an extension of our classroom. We call it our outdoor classroom. Because the learning just doesn't stop after you exit the building.
Right.
We're learning about our environment. We're learning about ecosystems and the way that animals work together. We're learning social studies. And when we see police cars drive by, we're talking about who those people are and how they help keep our community safe. We're learning about different trades in construction when we see the crane lift up big things on top of the building. It's just a myriad different ways. I could go on and on and on about gross motor and moving your body and being healthy and all these different things, but just all the different research and studies prove that children need to be outside. They need to be outside for their brains. They need to be outside to learn socially. It's crucial, and we try to bank on that as much as we can. You know, obviously there are safeguards in place about temperature and weather and things
sure.
like that. But if it's not freezing, sleeting rain, we're getting our rain boots on, we're getting our umbrellas, and we're going. Because how else are we going to learn about the weather? You know, we can read books about it. We can watch videos about it, which we try not to do. Or we could go out and experience it and test and really just get our hands on it and really see it with our own eyes. So.
And this is a very less abstract form of education, because it's so interesting, you know, being someone who's in school now, you will hear adults say, well, back when I was in school, mm-hmm. the way we did things, and they will view that as being a good thing because they feel like they came out of it all right. But there is something to be said about taking something that is abstract, a concept, and making it tangible. And so how would you compare education of today versus education of the past?
I think education today, like you mentioned, it really focuses on bringing in the concrete, especially like I mentioned, my background is in elementary ed. So I did a lot of special ed too, teaching kids math, reading, things like that. And those kind of things have changed as well from being like, okay, we're just going to add up and down and that's just how it works, right? And now we're bringing in the different models and the different visuals. So same things with the younger kids as well. We're getting our hands on it. We're learning about this. One of the things that we really focus on at Toledo Day Nursery is social emotional learning and emotional regulation. We use a program called Conscious Discipline, which really focuses on even starting at infants, identifying your emotions and being able to name them and sitting with them, even if they're unpleasant for a moment. And so that program in itself, I've learned, has even helped me take my emotions and my regulations from the abstract to the concrete. I know a lot of people in my generation, we're talking about social media and technology again, instead of trying to work through our emotions, we just hop on Instagram really quick, or we hop on and we're texting our friends rather than thinking about what we're doing.
Having to sit with those things.
Exactly. And so bringing that from the abstract of, I'm feeling upset and I don't know why, I'm just going to hop on my phone and try to push it down, into, no, this is, I'm feeling disappointed. Why am I feeling disappointed? Well, I was hoping that something would go this way and it didn't. Okay, so how am I going to work through that instead? Those concrete steps, learning from me, doing top down, is helping the kids as well. So for example, we have, you know, all of the concrete tools for that. We have little stuffed gingerbread people, we call them, that are the feeling buddies. So there's one for happy, sad, calm, all these different things. So rather than just saying, you're feeling mad, well, what does that mean? What does that look like?
Yeah.
Well, I can flip the feeling buddy around. His mouth is going like this. His eyebrows are down like this. That's what your face looks like. And it feels really silly to do it with the kids. Like, no, look in the mirror. Your eyebrows look like this. Your mouth looks like this. But really laying it out for them. So it's not just this abstract word of mad. And it's like, you're feeling hot in your body right now. Your hands are clenched up in fists. This is what it feels like when you're mad. So like bringing it back to them in those concrete ways.
And that's one thing I think even adults are still learning to couple with, because from a young age, they were told that there are certain emotions that are simply bad, mm-hmm. or there are emotions that are simply good. But this is really placing value, equal value, on all emotions, that it's just as important to feel angry and upset and disappointed and embarrassed as it is to feel great, excited, and enthusiastic about something.
Absolutely. So the founder of Conscious Discipline, her name is Dr. Becky Bailey. She writes a lot in her books about how our emotions are they're guiding us, right? They're emotional guidance. And so they're all trying to tell us something. So when you're feeling mad, it's not, oh, you're being bad. You're feeling angry. You're not allowed to feel angry. It's you're feeling angry, and that's trying to tell you something. You're feeling angry because Timmy knocked down your tower, right? And, you know.
Timmy.
Exactly, Timmy. But he knocked down your tower. You're feeling mad about that. This is guiding you towards what can you do about it now? Or what do you need to tell him? Or how are you going to work through your anger rather than just, don't be angry. It's fine. It's just a tower. Rebuild it, right? Giving them those tools to sit with it and say, no, it's okay. You're allowed to be mad. Yeah, I would be mad too if my tower got knocked over. And just reassuring them that it's okay. Like, it's okay to have our emotions, because when we start telling kids that now, we hopefully, fingers crossed, won't end up with a generation that's either ashamed or too proud to admit that they are feeling what they're feeling and try to press it down. So hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah,
I'll let you know in 20 years.
Right, because you see there's so much emotional repression that goes on where kids are told that you should not be able to express this emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Keep this one bottled up until you get home and then let it out.
Exactly.
But now they're in a position where it's okay to feel a certain way about something.
Absolutely.
And so for you, it sounds like you're a lifelong learner, just as we hope the kids will be,
mm-hmm.
because you're constantly looking at new research and constantly doing reading. And
yeah.
So what is the importance for you in staying fresh and up to date with the latest information in your field?
Absolutely. It's very important. We do regular staff trainings. We do, we had a book study that we did recently of the Conscious Discipline books, just making sure that we are all on the same page, making sure that we all, you know, we're all on the same team here. We're all rooting for the same thing. So staying up to date and making sure that, you know, what we thought 5 years ago is still relevant, or is there new information that we could be incorporating? Is there something better that we could be doing? Does this not work anymore? You know, it's constantly changing and evolving. And so making sure that we're reading up on it and we are doing the best that we can to stay updated and fresh with it is super important to us.
Yeah. What is the role of collaboration in early childhood education? Because certainly it takes a lot of individuals just to ensure the success of one student.
Absolutely. So one thing that I really love about Toledo Day Nursery is that we start with infants, right? And they move up. And so it's not just me talking to my preschool team about what's going on with Timmy today. It's then going back and talking to Timmy's toddler teacher and being like, hey, when he was in your class, how was this going on? Like, what was his foundation? And even going back to the infant teachers, hey, when he was in your room, what was going on with here? So we can really track and see that kid as the whole kid and not just, okay, now he's three, now he's in my class, now I'm the only person that knows anything about him, right? And that really helps too, talking with your team about that and your whole building, is the family aspect as well. Hey, what is, you know, Timmy's mom like when this happens? Or like, you know, does he have family that does XYZ or things like that? So really just collaborating and making sure that we're all talking to each other about what's best for him, what we've seen for him and all of that, and just getting the real picture rather than just, okay, now he's here, so what are we going to do now?
Right. And certainly you get to see over time the evolution of a child. And
absolutely.
So in what ways is that rewarding? And then what are also the challenges that come with having such a responsibility along with many others in that child's village?
Right. One of the great things about that I can see is just building that bond so early and so young. Just so, like, the infants in our classroom right now, obviously they're in that classroom most of the day. They'll come down and they'll come visit in preschool, or preschoolers will go down and visit them. We're really big on the school family motto, which is another conscious discipline pillar, and it really focuses on building that community within ourselves. You know, we're really big on connection in that way. And so seeing the child from where they start and building that bond with their families early really sets up to show not just the child, but their family as well, that we're all a community here. We all want what's best. And, you know, we're partnering with you as their home family and bringing them into our school family to make this one huge happy family. One of the challenges, I would say, is, you know, just getting everybody on the same team can be a little challenging at times.
Sure.
You know, we all, not that we think we're better than anyone else, but we all have strong ideas and we all want to share them. We're excited about sharing them. And we're not always going to agree with each other, as in with any job, with any family, with any functioning group. We all have to sit down and brainstorm and figure that out together. So that can be challenging at times, but for the most part, we're all get it. You know, we're all on the same team. So it's never a fight. It's never a drag out anything. It's just, how are we going to best do this to you?
And I think that that discourse is representative of passion, because if there weren't any pushback, you'd really be concerned of if there was enough pushback.
Absolutely. Yeah. If everybody's just nodding their head and saying yes, then maybe we're not really listening and maybe we're not really trying, right? So,
right.
I mean, it's great when we all have good ideas that we all agree with, but if we're all just like, yeah, sure, that's fine. So it's, yeah, learning how to communicate with everybody else, learning what everybody's preferences are, and learning how to communicate with each other about that. That's definitely a challenge, but it's rewarding in the end to see us all fit together like puzzle pieces just to do what's best for the kids.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you started in elementary, and now that you're in the preschool level, what would you say is the amount of discretion? How much of that content is at your discretion in terms of how you guide your class?
So we do have curriculum that we follow, and we do have Ohio standards that we need to meet, and you know, documentation and that sort of thing. But a lot of it is up to our discretion. A lot of it is us able to, like I said earlier, just tap into what the kids are doing, what they're interested in, and go from there. You know, if they say they're interested in ice cream, then we're going to find a way to incorporate all of the different substandards and things with that and make sure we're hitting out in different ways. But yeah, a lot of it, I mean, we don't have, that's been one of the greatest things for me, is that I'm not handed a big packet and saying, this is what you're going to teach this year, which was always a struggle, which obviously it's important. Kids
right.
need to know how to multiply, and kids need to know how
it's
to read.
It's good to have a society when people can do both of those things.
Correct, right? Have the freedom and the foundational skills. I think in preschool it's great because the foundational skills look different.
Right.
It's not, you know, it's the foundational skills. Yes, we're counting. Yes, we're doing letters. But it's emotional regulation. It's sharing. It's knowing how to communicate with your friends. It's you know, the gross motor things as well, jumping, kicking, climbing, holding a pencil for fine motor, all that stuff as well. But it's not like you're going to get held back in preschool if you don't do these things. So it's a little more open-ended that way.
Yeah, and we try so hard to understand children through this formulaic model that may not work for every child.
Exactly.
And so what is the disadvantages of just trying to make kids fit into a box when they can differ in many different ways, even if they're, you know, neurodivergent or just think about things differently?
Yeah. So unfortunately, there are some things that we do have to work towards. Not unfortunately, but it gives you a little bit more structure behind what you're working on with kids and what your goals are and what you're focusing on. We do have students in our room that have different abilities, and it's not anything to us. It's just, you know, varying what we can do. So some kids are able to, you know, hop and jump and skip, and some kids are working on it. So how can I take one activity and meet it for my kids that are all the way up here and for the kids that might not be there yet? So just differentiation in our activities and our materials that we put out, just making sure that it's something's available for everyone and they don't feel like, well, you can't do this yet, so only these kids get to do this activity because you're not there yet, so you're going to do something different. They're all working on the same thing, and most of the time they don't even realize that, you know, Timmy has one thing and Jane has a different thing. And that's the beauty of it, is they don't feel different. You know, everybody knows which kids need a little bit more support and which kids don't. But we all help each other with that. It's not like, oh, so-and-so needs help with something, so I'm not going to play with them or I'm not going to work with them. It's so-and-so needs help, so I'm going to teach them how to do it and I'm going to help. And that's really the beautiful thing about our classroom.
And I'm sure you've had conversations with parents where they maybe feel worried more so than you think they should be about their child. And of course, it's natural and it's good for parents to express concern for their child's well-being. But do you see that parents maybe over-concern themselves with a child's progress?
Maybe a little bit. I like you said, we're all just concerned. We all just want what's best. And so sometimes when I feel that way, or if I'm like, you know, they're really doing okay, like you're totally fine. Like I mentioned earlier, I don't have children myself, so I have to try to put myself into that mind frame of this is why they're worried and this is why they're concerned. You know, they just want the best, as we all do.
Of course.
But we're looking at it in different ways. And so just trying to get into their perspective and show them my perspective as well. Again, meeting in the middle, it's all about collaboration. But mostly it's just reassuring that, you know, they're doing great. They're doing fine. Like, they're right where they need to be. I think a lot with elementary education, I know I keep saying that, but with kindergarten readiness, I think the bar has shifted so much, even back from when I was in kindergarten.
Yeah.
You know, if you knew how to tie your shoes, if you knew X, Y, Z, then you were good. And now I feel like a lot of parents feel pressured that if your child doesn't know how to write the entire alphabet, if they don't know their numbers 1 through 100, that they're going to be so far behind. And at Toledo Day Nursery, we do focus on those things. We focus on numbers and letters and all that great stuff. But one of our main focuses for kindergarten readiness is, are they able to wait their turn patiently? Are they able to wait their turn as best they can? Are they able to, you know, stick up for themselves and voice their needs? Are they able to, you know how to ask for help and know who to go to and where? So those things we think are, you know, where we start. And then obviously we get into the numbers and the letters as well. But yeah, social emotional is a huge, huge, huge for us.
Yeah. And I can imagine that for you being able to come in each day and to be able to help those kids out. I'm sure it definitely helps, you know, wake up in the morning.
Absolutely.
And help those kids out. But Abby Spencer with Toledo Day Nursery, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an honor.
Thank you. And
thank
that
you.
Has been the first episode of Toledo Works from the Toledo Free Press and WGTE Public Media. I'm your host, Jaden Jefferson. Thanks for joining us.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.